Good morning, everybody. We're going to start, so please take your seats. I call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. There is a quorum present. Has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes? Representative Hewitt.
I am, ma'am, and I would, Chair, and I would like to lay them over. I'd like to.
It's Monday. It's
Monday,
okay.
You call this meeting out of Monday. I would like to move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Hewitt has moved the approval of the minutes for Wednesday, February 20th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for the Wednesday, February 20th meeting are approved. So, members, we have a very full agenda today with a lot of folks that want to testify on the bills. So we're going to try to keep everybody's comments to about 2 minutes each. And Laura will be taking watching the time on that. And we have quite a few amendments, too, with some of the bills. So this is the first time in our committee where we've dealt with a lot of amendments. So please, people, be patient. We will try to be as succinct as possible. First up is Representative Torkelson's House File 853. Oh, that's right. We're going to do the overview first. Sorry. It is a Monday morning. So we have the Newham Public Schools to come up and talk about the work that they did during the interim and how they came up with some of these bills, and they're going to just do a quick overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And just a little bit of an overview about these bills that we're hearing today. This committee is examining 6 bills initiated by the New Ulm Public Schools. These bills offer possible solutions to reducing the complexity and excessive paperwork requirements in the area of special education. Minnesota School Boards Association not only supports this work, we submit that this work is imperative. The historical context for this discussion extends back 44 years ago to the original Individual Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, which all of us here today wholeheartedly support. However, over the years, IDEA compliance had evolved into a system which was repetitive, complex, and exhausting. Realizing this 14 years ago in the reauthorization of IDEA, U.S. Congress intentionally reduced the paperwork burden on school personnel. While Congress took proactive steps to address the problem, Minnesota has retained its special education laws and rules, as pointed out in the 2013 report of the legislative auditor. There are key findings and facts from this report in your handout that looks in your packet in a handout that looks like this. In response, in the fall of 2017, New Ulm School District rolled up their sleeves and went to work. They developed 6 recommendations that would reduce the paperwork, provide more local flexibility, and provide more time with students. New Ulm submitted their proposal to MSBA last summer. In turn, MSBA asked school district superintendents across the state if they agreed with these 6 recommendations. Of those who responded, over 96% agreed with all 6 recommendations. So paperwork is not the only reason to consider these bills. Minnesota is experiencing a significant shortage of special education teachers. We would submit one contributing factor is that special education has become too complicated, too hard to manage, and is too emotionally taxing. Members, thank you for your willingness to take on this sensitive and difficult task of paperwork reduction today. It is our hope, whether you agree or disagree with these proposals, that we can agree that something needs to be done, and now is the time. And with that, Madam Chair, I will hand it over to Irina Sabaliba.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. And Ms. Sedley, can you say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Ms. Chair, my name is Irina Sabaliba, and I'm Special Services Coordinator for New Ulm Public School District. Today, I would like to share with you our concerns and possible recommendations for special education paperwork reduction. Here are the challenges our special educators are facing while providing special education services for our students. They're dealing with unbearable burden of paperwork. As a result, they have less and less time for teaching students. Focus of special education got shifted from the needs of the students to the needs of meeting paperwork requirements. It's not surprising, but still very concerning, that we cannot close the achievement gap. In reality, additional paperwork requirements have nothing to do with helping students. It does not increase achievement, and teachers cannot address students' needs quickly enough without completing a ton of paperwork. Let's look at the barriers we would like to remove so our special educators would gain more teaching time with our students. The first one is a functional behavior assessment. When educators have concerns about the behavior of the student with disability, they need to conduct the functional behavior analysis in order to determine why the student is showing such actions. Functional behavior analysis, or FBA, is a process of gathering and analyzing information about the student behavior. We look what happened before the behavior, during the behavior, and after the behavior to figure out which intervention will help the student to learn more about acceptable behaviors. According to Minnesota law, functional behavior assessment cannot be a standalone assessment. We must do a comprehensive evaluation every time the team needs to address the behavior concerns. Those evaluations delay special education services for up to 2 months. It puts an additional burden on our teachers. Comprehensive assessments involve from 5 to 8 people, up to 20 hours to do the actual assessment, and 30 days to complete the report. Instead of working with the student, our teachers have to write 20 to 30 pages long evaluation reports. We can do functional behavior assessment more efficiently to collect data needed for teams to make decisions. It will take 1 or 2 people, 2 or 3 hours, and 1 day to get it done. Without the FBA, the IEP team is limited to fewer and more restrictive options, such as more time for a student to be in resource room away from his or her peers, one-on-one paraprofessional support throughout the day to address the behaviors, or alternative placement options. Additional meetings might be needed to address student behaviors and provide short-term support and solutions. As a result, it's often too late to intervene when the evaluation is completed. By the time the student might exhibit more severe behaviors, face more disciplinary actions, or be placed in a more restrictive setting. So our recommendation is to conduct the FBA as a standalone assessment. We need to figure out how to help our students as quickly as we can. The next one is IEP objectives. When individualized education program is developed, it includes specific goals for a student to work on. Minnesota rules are also requiring short-term objectives to specify how those goals would be met. Federal law does not have such a requirement. As I'm working with the student on meeting those goals, I might discover that the student needs some prerequisite skills, not listed as her objective. Or the student needs to work on several skills at the same time to achieve the goals. Do I have to call a meeting every time I need to adjust my teaching strategies? If I'm limiting myself as a teacher, I'm limiting myself to my students to the learning opportunities as well. Another problem with having specific objectives is to report progress on them. To ensure that our students are on track to meet their goals, we report objectives on them several times in writing, the progress report on actual goals. We're also required to report the progress on short-term objectives as well. It is very repetitive. For example, if a teacher has 3 goals with 5 objectives for each goal to work on, she has to report on 15 different measures for just one student. With 20 students on the workload for that teacher, it adds up to additional 20 extra hours of time teacher need to find for working on those progress reports for each grading period. It consumes all the time teacher could possibly have before and after school, during prep time, during lunchtime, and sometimes even instead of working directly with the students. Our recommendation is to let the local teams, IEP teams, decide how those annual IEP goals should be achieved. Next one is a priority notice. It used to be a short summary of the meeting, and now it takes sometimes longer to write the priority notice than the actual IEP in some cases. We have to include the excessive amount of information on that notice. We now add another option to consider at our IB meeting agendas to talk about them so we can write those things on the prior written notice, even though the team agrees to the plan and we would like to move forward. In addition, MDEs start to use this prior written notice format for other documentation as a response to the parent request for a special education assessment. Our recommendation is to eliminate the requirements to put that additional information on the prior written notice.
Cancellation conference. Current Minnesota law requires school district to hold a cancellation conference within 10 calendar days from the date the district receives parent objective to the proposal why federal law does not contain any cancellation conference requirements. Parents should have different options for resolving disagreements, such as working directly with case managers on the proposal and the concerns parents has. IP team should have an opportunity to continue communication with the parents to find a solution and come up with an agreement. Cancellation conferences require additional staff time and paperwork to be completed by specific timelines. They also delay the implementation of the IP and limit the opportunities to work with the student. If it's an initial IEP, no services could be provided till all those issues are resolved. After cancellation conference, the district must create another prior written notice summarizing in writing how the agreement has been reached and often must propose another IEP, which adds to more paperwork. Our recommendation is to eliminate that requirement to hold a cancellation conference and allow our teams to work together to solve our differences. State and district assessments do not reflect on students' unique educational needs. Minnesota law asks IEP teams to include the results of student performance on any state and district-wide assessment on their IEPs. Those assessment results are not tied to the specific IEP goals. We might not represent the student's current academic performance because they are almost a year old right now. They create misconception that the needs of the students are not addressed on the student's IEP. It might lead to parent requests to provide additional services based solely on the results of those assessments. To address this issue, teachers have to explain in writing why those results are not always relevant to the student's performance and how those needs can be met differently by providing more accommodation and support during the testing time instead of adding additional goals the students do not need to work on just based on those assessment results. Our recommendation is to remove that requirement to include state and local testing results on all IEPs. In 2013, the recommendations were made to reduce SPED paperwork requirements. More than 5 years later, local agencies still don't see paperwork reduction at the district level. We can save a lot of time to work with our students directly instead of completing a lot of unnecessary, redundant, and repetitive paperwork. In summary, we recommend to follow federal guidelines and eliminate unnecessary state requirements. We also recommend for Minnesota Department of Education to streamline paperwork requirements for special education that impact teachers' ability to work with students. And finally, we would like to see the power of making IEP decisions given back to the IEP teams. In our district, we have many highly qualified and very dedicated special education teachers who, despite the burden of paperwork requirements, continue to provide high-quality services for our students. We appreciate you taking your time today and to hear from us today. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Sobolova. Did you have anything else to add? Otherwise, we'll take some time. Does anybody at the table have a few quick questions for Ms. Dietrich or Ms. Sobolova? All right, then. Thank you. I think we'll have our first bill up. Is Representative Torkelson here for House File 853? It looks like, I'm looking around, Representative Torkelson is not here yet.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would suggest that the roads are pretty bad in the St. James area and he has trouble. The St. Cloud State hockey team spent the night in Representative Torkelson's jail.
his armory, I believe.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, Ms. Dietrich?
Representative Torkelson, I think, had an amendment in Ways and Means.
He's here. That's nice to know. We'll just move on then. Why don't we pick up House File 1005? Is Representative Pryor here? Yes, she is. Good morning, Representative Pryor. Would Representative Wislawick, would you like to move Representative Pryor's bill before the committee?
Yes, I will move Representative Pryor's bill.
Thank you. So move, we have House File 1005 in front of the committee. And Representative Pryor, would you like to explain your bill? And introduce yourself for the record and explain your bill. Thank you.
I will introduce myself for the record. I am Lori Pryor, Representative 48A. Thank you. And this is House File 1005. It's about the conciliation conferences. Is the testimony that you just heard, this one is actually an alternative to what was discussed before, which I think the discussion before would have eliminated these conferences, and this just modifies it. But I will turn it over to my testifier to explain in detail.
Thank you, Representative Pryor, and it's the Chair's intent to lay this bill over for possible inclusion. So would you like to go ahead, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sarah Stack. I'm a director of special education for Minneapolis Public Schools. I've been a general ed teacher and a special education teacher and or leader, educational leader, since 1988, so I'll let you all do the math. I'm here because the time that's spent on writing IEPs and evaluations and due process meetings is really impacting the time that our teachers are able to spend with students. So we are proposing three options instead of the two. Currently, we have the option where if a parent approves of the IEP, they can sign off on the IEP, and then it's essentially done. The second option is to disagree and go into a conciliation meeting. Conciliation meetings can bring additional members to the meeting or new members. Sometimes they can feel really contentious, which kind of harms the relationships between the teachers and parents at times, so then you have to rebuild. The third option would be that the parent can disagree with some specific elements of the IEP and request a condensed IEP team meeting with the members that would be necessary to take care of the issues that the parents had concerns with. And I think that this would be a cleaner and quicker process than what we currently have at this point in time.
Thank you, Ms. Stack. Representative Pryor, did you have anything else to add? Otherwise, I'll pull up another testifier that's testifying in opposition. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay, then I have a Jody Manning on the list to testify. Thank you. Ms. Manning, could you introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Sure. Good morning. My name is Jody Manning, and I am an employee at Pacer Center. I've been employed at Pacer Center for 15 years, and I currently serve as the director of the Parent Training and Information Center there. Of important note, I'm also the parent of a 32-year-old son with disabilities who had an IEP and went through his education through grade 12, graduated from Rutgers University with honors. He's currently a father, a husband, and a full-time employee and tax-paying citizen. I want to state that we don't actually oppose this proposal, and we'd like to continue to work on the language. We think that we would be able to come up with some great language that would please all sides. I do want to share, though, that we believe that conciliation conferences are incredibly important. My team, the Parent Training and Information Center, is made up of 17 full and part-time advocates, and we cover the entire state of Minnesota. And we have all decided to leave our careers that we were trained in to try to help parents understand this complicated special education process. And we do that through individual assistance to parents, some written materials, one of which you will see a little bit later today, presentations that we do oftentimes in the evenings and meetings that we attend. And so our advocates, I have some data for you of advocates who have attended conciliation conferences in the last 2 years, school years, excuse me. So 2016 to 2017, you should note that there are 165 approximately school days per year. On 119 of those days in the 16-17 school year, we had an advocate attending a conciliation conference with a parent. In the 16-17 school year, we had 113 days where an advocate was attending a meeting with parents. After those meetings, we collect some follow-up data through surveys. And 100% of the parents, you should know, stated that their issues were resolved. 0% said their issues were not resolved. So again, we believe that conciliation conferences are very valid and important. However, we have always worked on the premise of issues should be resolved at the lowest level possible. We long have encouraged parents, some of the professionals in the room might have seen that parents have written in the third box when the third box wasn't there on the consent and objection form. And we encourage parents to write in on the form stating that they disagree with some but not all of the IEP. As advocates, we would not want an IEP to remain and stay put from the former year if the parents didn't disagree with it. So we look forward to working with the representative, and others to make sure that this language is appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Manning. Any questions from the table here? Representative Mullen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Manning, I'm new to this. I'm new to the legislature. I'm new to education policy. So I'm just trying to figure all of this out. And I was just curious for the new Ulm working group, was PACER involved in that, invited or participated? Were you involved in that at all?
No.
Ms. Manning?
No, we were not. But we've been working on this issue with Minneapolis Public Schools. We've met with them a couple of times, and we've been able to come up with some language that we believe that all parties would agree with.
Okay. Ms. Finney, thank you. It was my understanding, actually, that PACER did testify at one of the five hearings that I see Ms. Clark coming up to the table. Ms. Clark, do you want to amend that answer, state your name for the record, and proceed?
Thank you. My name is Sarah Clark here with the PACER Center. I think Jody did a fantastic job. But, yes, this has been an ongoing conversation on the Senate side. We've had lots of conversations with Senator Pratt, who chaired the Education Policy Committee over there. We presented at some of his interim hearings, and we thank the New Ulm School Board for answering his call to kind of come up with some solutions on paperwork, but we certainly weren't part of New Ulm's process. So we have been involved in the conversation, and we look forward to continuing to work with all of you and your colleagues in the Senate to come up with solutions that help our teachers, but certainly protect the rights of our students as well.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To PACER, to Ms. Stack, no, not Ms. Stack.
Manning,
thank you. You know, when I was in the classroom and I had special needs students in my classroom, I found that if they asked for an IEP meeting frequently, that was a better solution to advancing into the other arenas of like conciliation, et cetera. So what prevents that from happening?
Ms. Manning.
Actually, nothing prevents an IEP from happening. The former legislation states that it would be offered, a conciliation conference would be offered. And that's why we encourage parents to say, I don't want a conciliation conference if I don't need it. Instead, I would like an IEP meeting, which is the beauty of that potential third box, is doing an alternative of an IEP meeting. There are times when conciliation conferences are necessary, but we can resolve smaller and more minor issues with merely an IEP meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Manning, as I recall, if the teachers are present at the IEP, which I always was, that as we discuss with the parents the need of the child, we can usually reach an agreement because it might be a strategy that I was using that wasn't appropriate for that learning disability. And so I made that adjustment, and we resolved those issues. It was rare that we stepped into that next box, but you know, I hope that that can continue, because I think when the parents and the teachers are meeting together in the IEP, that we more directly address the specific need that the parent has brought to us in regard to the child's needs. And, you know, it's not an easy task. I was a regular classroom teacher with, you know, special education students who were my fantastic students always. But, you know, we could resolve those issues, and then the teacher worked harder to address that need. But anyway, I just wanted to say that, because that was my experience, and I didn't think there was anything that would prevent parents from requesting more IEPs. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Ms. Manning. You know, does I think you see some of the problems that are expressed in these bills. Has PACER come forward with any recommendation on how to address some of this excessive paperwork? And by the way, I have two special ed nephews and relatives, so or students, so I'm well aware of their needs. Plus, I served on the school board for quite a few years. 16, yeah.
Anyway. I think I see Ms. Clark coming to the table to answer that. Please state your name for the record again and proceed.
Yeah, Sarah Clark here with the PACER Center and the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. Representative Grunhagen, thank you for your question. Because of the individualized natures of our students, as well as the different processes of our districts, we have really struggled to come up with some specific solutions that address some of these issues, because we want to make sure that our students' rights are protected. So I certainly think there are a number of things we can do, reducing caseload, supporting our teachers, supporting our paraprofessionals. There's a lot we can do, but on this it's been challenging. And so we thank New Ulm for coming forward with their specific proposals, but we want to make sure that at the end of the day our students' rights are protected.
Representative Grunhagen, one more follow-up, and then we're going to lay the bill over.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it would be very helpful, I think, if PACER did come forward with some recommendations on how to address some of the concerns that are shared in these bills. And I know you'll be a part of the process, but it'd be nice to see actually something in a formal document, if possible.
Right, Ms. Manning.
If I may, one thing that I want to state is that we think that it might be helpful to delve into where the requirements are coming from. Oftentimes we see some requirements come from the district itself rather than federal or state legislation. Just recently I was working with a parent, and she said that they were going to have a meeting because they needed to come together to do the paraprofessional checklist. And my response was, paraprofessional checklist? I had never heard of such a thing. And I was informed that the district has a new checklist that for any child that has a paraprofessional support in their IEP, they needed to go through a checklist to determine whether or not that was fully appropriate. So that's just one example, but there are some requirements that come from other sources, again, instead of just federal and state legislation. They come from the district. So I think it would be valuable to look at where those burdens of the paperwork are coming from.
Thank you, Ms. Manning. And I think we're going to move to lay out. Actually, Representative Pryor, did you have follow-up at all?
No, I do not. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members, for hearing my bill this morning.
Thank you. I definitely is a Monday morning. So we're going to lay House File 1005 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And I see Representative Torkelson has joined us. So we have House File 853 up first. Good morning, Representative Torkelson. I hear you had some rough weather this weekend down in your district.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair. Yes, it was a rough day yesterday and a bit of a rough ride getting here this morning, but I made it in one piece. I had to
well, we're happy.
Do a little rerouting to get here. Madam Chair, I feel like I should have some treats with me. I don't think I've ever had a bill in education.
Representative Torkelson, I do not require that, so you're just fine.
Well, I'm glad you don't, because I don't have any. In my 10 years in the legislature, I don't think I've ever had an education bill, not one I can recall anyway.
We're happy to have you here. Would you like to proceed and present your bill? Oh, sorry. Thank you, Representative Erickson.
I'll move 853 to be considered for inclusion in a possible omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Erickson has moved your bill before us. And why don't you go ahead and state your name once again for the record and go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, if I may make a few more remarks
before
we get to the presentation. I think you've already heard from the folks from New Ulm, is that correct?
Yes, we have.
You know, they've done a great job identifying these issues and actually putting these proposals in written form so that we can evaluate them here at the legislature in a way that makes good sense. I'm happy to be able to bring these two bills forward really on their behalf, but also on my own behalf, because many people probably don't realize this, but I'm a former teacher myself, although I was a band director, so I didn't have to deal with IEPs. I've heard a lot about them because my wife is now a retired elementary teacher. She taught elementary school for some over 30 years, so many of her colleagues were special ed folks, and I've spoken with them many times over the years and often heard about how challenged they are with the amount of paperwork that they have to do as opposed to how much time they can spend with their students. They went into this work because they want to work with the students, not work at a computer screen. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd just like to let you know that I really do fully support these efforts.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And do you have a testifier you'd like to introduce?
I'm sorry.
Is there a testifier that you have on the bill?
I believe I do.
Wonderful. I'm getting to my own notes here, too. So.
I hope he's with me and not against me, Madam Chair.
I believe we must have Jeff Bertrang here. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed, or whoever you'd like to have first. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Andrew Heidemann. Madam Chair and other members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come here to testify today. My name is Andrew Heidemann. I'm a special education teacher at Anoka High School, where I work with students specifically with emotional behavior disorders, grades 9 through 12, settings 1 through 3. When I tell people what I do for a living, they usually say, thank you so much for doing that. Must be a really hard job. But the truth is, I'm incredibly lucky to have my job. I love my job. I have seen first-generation college students, first-generation high school graduates, and many students graduate and gain quality employment, making them independent, tax-paying individuals. But the really hard thing about my job is that there is a priority set on paperwork and due process over caring and teaching students. I never get time to actually prepare for my classes. I'm expected to teach math and social-emotional behavior skills to my students every day without time to actually prepare for these classes. I have to spend most of extra every minute working on paperwork so that I can stay ahead of due dates and stay compliant with law. During my prep time on most days, I'm dealing with students either in crisis or students who are struggling to navigate the systems of a high school. The difference between students having a good day or students having a bad day is if I'm available to help them or not. I sometimes feel that the priority has to be paperwork, leaving my students to fend for themselves, which can lead to negative consequences for them. Most of my students are from broken homes, foster homes, homes where parents are using or they're being raised by grandparents or in some circumstances great-grandparents. I have homeless students, students on probation, students that are transitioning from setting 4 programs who haven't been in a mainstream setting in years, and the only way to help these kids is to keep them engaged in school and is to maintain positive relationships with them. By doing that, I need to always be there for them. I can't say, sorry, I can't help you today. I have to complete 3 IEPs, 2 significant changes, and schedule a meeting for the next week. I put my students first, and I will always do that. Also, I've seen many high-quality teachers leave our department due to the demands put on them daily. The students, the paperwork, frequent change of rules about paperwork cause hours of changes per year. Due to some policy changes earlier last school year, I had to commit 6 hours to changing already completed paperwork. I was encouraged to sit in my office and have people cover my classes so I could have my paperwork completed properly so I would be compliant. I myself have been guilty on bad days of looking at corporate training jobs and other careers for people with teaching licenses who do not want to teach anymore, but I am lucky to have a great school with great support and people I work with. So in closing, I'm here in support of House File 853 because I believe as a special education teacher, this will mean less paperwork and more time with students.
Thank you, Mr. Heidemann. And I spent time this interim in a level 3 EBD program, and my husband teaches in a level 4 middle school program. Okay. So thank you very much for your work as well.
Thank you.
I believe we have maybe Jillian Nelson. Was it Jillian Nelson that was up here earlier? Or?
Yes.
Ms. Nelson, will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Jillian Nelson from the Autism Society of Minnesota. I also serve on the Governor's Council for Developmental Disabilities, and I'm a member of the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities and the Coalition for Children. I am also an autistic adult, so as such, I am a product of Minnesota special education. I'm here today to speak out in support for House File 1277. That might not be right.
House File.
What, Jane? 853. This bill has the propensity to impact the quality of education special education recipients receive. Allowing functional behavioral assessments to be completed separately from a full evaluation will increase access to education by allowing them to be completed in a more timely manner and not burdening the school with a full reassessment when not needed. We sometimes fail to remember that all behavior is communication, and we are all familiar with the common idiom, actions speak louder than words. For many students receiving special education services, with or without speech skills, behavior is their primary form of communication. Often the behavior is a student's only means of saying please or no. The FBA gives meaning to these verbal requests and protests. A functional behavioral assessment looks at the cause of the behavior to understand the need that is being met by the behavior, and an FBA allows students' behaviors to be understood for their purpose, rather than manages a disciplinary problem, which in turn allows educators to meet the individual needs in a way that allows the students to participate fully in their education. This bill opens the opportunity to allow FBA to be completed as needed, as often as needed, as often behaviors change as the student learns and grows. Within this bill, though, it is vital to make sure that parents do retain the right to request a full, complete reevaluation if needed, and thank you for your support on this bill today.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson, very much. And then do we have any other testifiers that have signed up to testify on this? Oh, go ahead. Why don't you make your way up to the table, state your name for the record, and proceed. And then just as that's happening, I want to let folks know, people had signed up to testify ahead of time, and we'll have those folks testify under each individual bill. And at the very end, since so many of these bills, all these bills deal with special needs, I will have folks, anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on in a particular bill toward the end. So if you've signed up for a specific bill, we'll have you come up for the specific bill, and then we'll move the general comments on the bills till the very end. So could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Madam Chair, my name is Aidel Abdul. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity this morning. Like I said, my name is Aidel Abdul, and I am a Somali autism mom. I have a son who is 16 years old that has autism, and I actually do support this bill for the reason that autism, as you may know, is very high in our community. It's 1 in 26, whereas nationwide it's 1 in 59, and autism is a behavior disorder, and so it's extremely important for children with autism, students with autism, to have an FBA or functional behavior assessment. I do, however, disagree a little bit with the New Ulm District representative, where she said that I think the parents, first of all, should be able to have the right to request a comprehensive FBA. Mm-hmm. However, as someone who has a master's degree in applied behavior analysis, it doesn't always take 2 to 3 hours to do a full FBA. You have to observe the child when they're having the behavior. You have to be able to talk to the parents. You have to talk to the caregivers. You have to figure out if there's something medical going on. And you also have to figure out the function of the behavior. Does the child have a means to communicate, to tell you what they need or what they want or what they're missing, if they're hurt? And so while it will reduce the paperwork, and I agree with some of the schools wanting to reduce the paperwork, but I don't think shortchanging our students is the right way to go. So I do support the bill, but with the right that the parents requesting to have a full comprehensive, should the parent or the child need it, because sometimes there might be other things going on rather than just the behavior that we see. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. Is there any questions at the table from members on this bill? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Abdul, are you suggesting perhaps that the language is not clear enough in this proposal to ensure that parents can also have the comprehensive evaluation? Because maybe we need to do some little adjustment on the language. Is that what you're saying?
Ms. Abdul?
Madam Chair, I'm from South Erickson. Nice to see you again, by the way. I am suggesting that while I agree with the language, I want us to recognize that students with disabilities also have medical issues that, like my son, they're not able to communicate if they have nonverbal, if they're nonverbal. And so it's important that the parents or the language to have something that indicates the parents have the right or the opportunity to request a comprehensive functional behavior assessment, which then includes speaking with the parents, interviewing them with the caregivers, with the, reviewing the medical information, making sure if there is any other issues medically going on that may be contributing to the child's behavior. So, yes, I am.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. And looking at the bill, the underlying language still remains. It just adds a section saying districts can do an FDA on its own if the parent, if when evaluating the students. But maybe we need to look at having something in there about parental notification, or not parental notification, but the ability for a parent to ask for a full one. So we'll look at that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Representative Torkelson. Do you have anything else to add before we move on?
Madam Chair, actually, I do not.
Okay, thank you. Then we're going to lay House File 853 over. And Representative Torkelson, would you like to continue with your House File 854?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. 854, I believe, may not have quite as smooth a ride.
Well, first we'll have Representative Erickson. Would you like to move 854 before us?
I move 854 to be before the committee and considered for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Torkelson, why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Well, thank you. As I was saying, Madam Chair, I believe 854 might have a little rougher ride than 853 had, but, you know, we're on a roll, so maybe things will go fine. I realize that these issues are very controversial at times. We all have the best wishes, the needs of the student in mind as we try to move forward with balancing this amount of paperwork with actually taking care of the students face-to-face. With that, Madam Chair, I will be happy to hear from the experts.
And thank you. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And please testify, could you state your name for the record and proceed?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Peter Martin. I am general counsel to the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I am here today on behalf of MSBA. I have practiced school law in Minnesota for nearly 20 years in the area of special education. I have worked closely with many school districts of all sizes, all of whom have been challenged in one way or another by the significant complexity and administrative burdens associated with special education compliance in this state. This committee is examining possible ways to remove the complexity, increase efficiency, and reduce administrative and paperwork burdens on school personnel. MSBA believes there is an urgent need to take action, and we applaud and support the work of this committee. I wish to comment specifically on House File 854. MSBA supports making changes to the statutes and rules related to conciliation conferences that would remove administrative burdens on school personnel while still retaining opportunities to resolve disputes at the lowest level possible. Under federal and state law, when a school district proposes to do something that relates to a child's special education program, a document known as a prior written notice must be prepared and sent to the parent. The purpose of the prior written notice basically is to inform the parent what the school district is proposing to do and why the school district is making the proposal. Under our state law, the parent has 14 days from the date the prior written notice is sent to either agree or disagree with the proposal. If the parent disagrees with the proposal, the school district...
Yes, we're on 854, which is about the elimination of the conciliation meeting.
Yes, I'm
not the prior written notice? Okay.
Yes, I am talking about
that. All right, thank you.
If the parent disagrees with the proposal, the school district is required in every case to offer a conciliation conference, even if the parent does not want to participate in a conciliation conference. Because the offer of a conciliation conference is required by our state law, the school district needs to document every offer in order to establish compliance with that law. Under current state rules, the conciliation conference must be held within 10 calendar days from the date the district receives the parent's objection. The meeting must take place at a mutually convenient time and place. Because the requirement is based upon a calendar day scenario, if the 10th calendar day falls on a weekend and the parent is not available at another time, it is possible the conciliation conference may need to be held on a weekend. The conciliation conference typically involves special education administrators, the case manager, and parent, but other school staff may be involved as well. The conciliation conference may itself last as long as an IEP meeting, approximately 1 to 2 hours of a school day. Minnesota rules further state that within 5 school days of the conciliation conference, the school district is required to provide what's known as a conciliation conference memorandum, whether or not an actual agreement to resolve the dispute is reached. This memorandum must be in the form of yet another prior written notice, which seems redundant, particularly since the school district already sent the parent a prior written notice on the same subject, which ultimately led to the disagreement in the first place. Because the memorandum itself must be in the form of a prior written notice, the parent has another 14 days to decide whether to agree or disagree with the proposal. If the parent disagrees with the proposal, the school district must offer another conciliation conference on the same subject. If the parent continues to disagree, the school district basically becomes stuck in an endless cyclical cycle of meetings that carry administrative burdens, consume staff time, and many times do not actually resolve the dispute. This cyclical cycle often delays services for students. Frequently, these disputes arise over a proposal to modify or update an IEP on an annual basis. I personally have worked with clients who have proposed up to 6 IEPs, have had 6 IEP conciliation conferences and IEP team meetings without a resolution. This process, and I can tell you from personal experience in working in the field, is exhausting school staff, and relief in this area is most assuredly needed. House File 854 does not eliminate the ability of the parties to participate in alternative dispute resolution. Under this proposal, school officials and parents still have the opportunity to meet and discuss concerns and potentially resolve their disagreement. Nothing in this bill precludes an administrator or a parent from sitting down and hammering out a resolution on an informal basis. We do not believe, as a result, that this bill compromises the rights of parents in any way. This bill only eliminates school districts' requirements to offer a conciliation conference each and every time a disagreement arises, and it also eliminates the requirement to prepare the memorandum. Because a number of dispute resolution mechanisms are also available, we believe opportunities to resolve special education disputes at an early stage will remain, but with notably less administrative burdens. If passed, this bill will bring sorely needed relief to school personnel, and we, for all of those reasons, we MSBA supports this proposal.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll preface this by saying I certainly, as a former teacher myself, am in favor of doing things that will lessen the burden, the paperwork on our special ed teachers. But saying that, I feel somewhat obligated to ask a question. I think many of us have received various emails, so I'm just going to ask a question sent to us and get your answer. And in this, someone writes, please do not remove my opportunity to resolve disagreements through a conciliation conference. Our IEP team held a conciliation conference, and we quickly resolved all of our disagreements. It played a valuable role in my daughter's education. How do we answer this person?
We're not actually eliminating...
Mr. Martin, go ahead.
Pardon me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are not actually eliminating the opportunity to resolve disputes in a small group meeting like a conciliation conference. The opportunity still remains to address matters at the lowest level possible. There, no administrator that I know would refuse a parent's request to sit down and talk about a concern and try to resolve it. Everyone that I know that I work with is always desirous of resolving disputes so that the provision of services for a child with a disability can continue. So I do not think that in answering your question, Representative, I do not think that there is going to be an impairment there in the parent's ability to get the resolution that the parent is looking for.
Representative Erdahl, did you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
I think we're going to go on to someone else who's signed up to testify. Is there Maren Christensen in the audience? Thank you. Ms. Christensen, will you state your name for the record, and please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Maren Christensen-Hofer. I lead a support group for families of autistic children. I work as a volunteer advocate. I serve on the Minnesota Autism Council, the Governor's Interagency Coordinating Committee on Early Intervention, and I'm a LEND Fellow at the University of Minnesota. But today I'm talking to you as a parent of an autistic child. Much of my work as an advocate focuses on addressing the information imbalance that exists between school districts and families of children with disabilities. I work with families to provide training on the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. I assist families with paperwork, and I help them navigate the procedures and pathways to obtaining services. And we've heard a lot of talk about the burdens of paperwork on teachers and staff, and I'm certainly very empathetic to that, but I also urge you to consider that those same burdens also exist for families of children with disabilities. And if it's difficult for the professionals, how does it feel for the families? That's the question I'd like you to think about. As a parent, I am all in favor of maximizing teacher time with students. I fully acknowledge we have some problems with our already overburdened special education staff. On that, I think we can all agree. But I don't share the belief that any attempt at reducing those burdens should come at the cost of safeguards to our students and families. Under current law, as we've heard, if a parent objects to any written proposal by the IEP team, they must be offered at least one conciliation conference, and this bill seeks to eliminate that requirement. It leaves the requirement that a district must inform parent of dispute resolution processes. But what does that mean exactly? It doesn't say how they must be informed or when. If a school district gives a family a handbook at their first IEP meeting that has this information in the fine print, does that mean that they've informed the family? What if the dispute doesn't come up until 5 years later? Is the family expected to retain that information? Again, these families are not professionals in these fields. They are never formally trained on the law unless they seek that training out. Expecting families to retain that information is also a challenge for them. This bill moves the burden of offering a conciliation conference from the school district to a burden of requesting alternative dispute resolution to the parent. In other words, it's no longer the district's responsibility to offer, it's the parent's responsibility to ask. And again, how are they supposed to know that that's even an option for them? Peter Martin previously testified about that this doesn't eliminate the option for a conciliation conference, but it places that burden on the family instead of the school district. This bill also begs the question about what exactly is the difference between a conciliation conference and some of the other methods of dispute resolution that are still in the bill. I think you have in your pamphlet a flyer that's put out by PACER. It looks something like this. Have you received that?
I believe it was with one of the previous bills. Yeah.
Okay. And I'd like you to direct your attention over to the side here where it talks about the different options there, the conciliation conference, the mediation, and the facilitated team meetings. You can see that under the conciliation conference, if that option were eliminated or no longer mentioned, that leaves the mediation and the facilitated team meetings. You'll also see under the first bullet point there, it says that both parties must agree to participate in the meeting. So hypothetically, that could leave a situation where a parent has objected to an IEP and the district has informed the parent of the dispute resolution processes, but then doesn't agree to participate in them. You know, is that likely? Maybe not. But as legislators, we need to think about, you know, the worst case scenarios. What option does that leave the parents? And finally, I'd like to address the cost issue. According to the PACER brochure, all three methods of dispute resolution, conciliation, mediation, and facilitated team meetings, are provided at no cost to the parent, but they're not provided at no cost to the state because a third-party facilitator is not free, at least not to the taxpayer. I'm wondering if anyone has looked at the cost of adding these additional third-party dispute resolution methods. Has anybody looked at the number of conciliation conferences versus mediation or team meetings hearing? If this legislation is passed, it's reasonable to expect that the number of conciliation conferences will go down and the number of facilitated team meetings and mediation will go up. And if I were a legislator, I would want to know how much that's going to cost.
Thank you. Ms. Christensen, can you wrap up? We're trying to keep people to 10 minutes.
All right, sure.
I've been a little, given a little leeway here.
I will just make my final point, and that is that these changes in legislation will not make the disputes go away. I mean, it would be great if that would happen. They're just making the paths to resolving them the less accessible for the families and more expensive for the taxpayer. So with that, I will thank you for allowing me to speak, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. I think we have one more testifier who's signed up. As she comes down, is there any questions for Ms. Christensen while she's up here from the table? Seeing none, Ms. Abdul, will you state your name for the record, please, again, and proceed? And we're going to try to keep people to 2 minutes so we can continue on and have some good discussion from the table.
Thank you. As a Somali, we talk fast, so I'll do my best, Madam Chair. My name, again, is Aidil Abdul. I'm a Somali autism mom, and I support this for a number of reasons, and I'm just going to read what I wrote and relate it to my own experience with my child in Bloomington Public Schools, where the school and I disagreed on the IEP. And the best thing to actually do is to have a good relationship for between the parents and the school district, so that you don't even have to go. Conciliation, facilitate mediation, due process, that's the best thing to do, to have a good relationship with them so that you can say, hey, look, you know, can you please teach my child this way, or can you do this skill, can you do that's the best thing to do. But it doesn't always work that way, and often school districts sort of just give you the IEP. The IDEA law of 2004, the federal law, states that parents are equal partners of the IEP team, but sadly that's not always the case. At any rate, the school district, Bloomington, and I disagreed because they wanted to send my child to a level 4 setting, which, as you know, it's where children, everybody has a disability, and I disagreed because I wanted my kid to learn in the least restrictive environment where he could see his typical peers without a disability. And so the law says that I could request an IEE, or independent education, evaluation education, which I did. But while that was going on, the next thing I know is I got an email from the Minnesota Department of Education that said, we're going to just bypass the conciliation, the facilitator, the mediation, and we're just going to take you, Ms. Abdul, to an expedited due process. And I had to find myself an attorney to go to court. So while a lot of people here are saying, you know, don't take this away, it already doesn't exist. Because if the school district can directly take the parent to court. And as you know, schools have attorneys. I didn't have an attorney. I couldn't find one. The one I found from the school law center said that she would charge me anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000. And I couldn't afford it. And so the school won. I just took him out of Bloomington. And I appreciate so many people saying, don't take the conciliation. But that's not the way reality is for so many of us. And I also want to point out that agencies like PACER get federal money and state money, millions of dollars to be exact, to educate and help parents learn the system, learn the process. And so I urge those agencies to do a reach out, and so that parents like me can request these things, so that we're not always waiting for the school to take us to court. And so I you don't have a lot of supporters here, I see. But I support this because I think reducing paperwork is good idea for our teachers, but also because it doesn't really work. If the school district doesn't want to go to conciliation, they can just take you to court like I've been to. I thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing your story, Ms. Abdul. Are there any more questions at the table on this bill? Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, because I have a bill coming up here in a few minutes, I actually watched some of the Senate testimony on this. And I thought there was someone that testified that conciliation conferences solve about 90% of disputes. And so am I wrong about that? Is there some statistics, some information?
Is Representative Torkelson, or is there anybody here that I'm seeing Ms. Ms. Manning coming up. Ms. Manning, could you state your name for the record again and proceed?
Surely. Hello, I'm Jody Manning from PACER Center, where I serve as the director of the Parent Training and Information Center. So I didn't talk about the 90%. I think that was someone else that brought up the 90%. But to review our survey data from parents who attend conciliation conferences, again, in the 2016-2017 school year, advocates attended 119 conciliation conferences with parents. And by the way, we oftentimes attend over the phone. So in those survey results, 60% of the parents in that year said that all of their issues were resolved in the conciliation conference. 40% said at least one of their issues were resolved, and 0% said that none of my issues were resolved. Further, 88% said that they will be able to resolve disputes in the future, having attended a conciliation conference. The following school year, 2017 to 2018, again, we attended 113 conciliation conferences. 63% of the respondents said that all of their issues were resolved in that one meeting. 37% said at least one of their issues were resolved in that one meeting. 0% again said that their issues were not resolved. And 100% of those respondents said that in the future, having attended a conciliation conference, they would better be able to resolve disputes in the future. I hope that helps.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Manning. Any follow-up? Okay. I am going to move to, I have one more person with their hand up, and then we will move to lay over the bill. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Good morning, Chair. House Committee here, Jeff Bertrand, Superintendent of New Ulm Schools. I'd like to kind of clarify to answer your question about the 90%. The whole purpose of our proposal was to say reduce paperwork. The conciliation requirement requires prior written notice on both ends of it. We just want to get to the point of getting this taken care of at the earliest stages so kids can get their services. Without this agreed to, the kids do not get their services and they delay services for them. So we want to cut the paperwork, reduce the paperwork, eliminate that step, and have it worked out informally at the local level between the parent and the IEP team.
Thank you, Mr. Bertrand. I'm going to lay over at House File 854. Oh, Rep. Torkelson, I'm so sorry. I should give you a final say. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for that. It does happen at great risk since I'm a little bit out of my element. But just a couple of points about this second bill. One, this is one example of where Minnesota goes above and beyond federal requirements. And from the testimony, the reading I've done and testimony I've heard today, it seems like the way it's administered is very cumbersome. So at the very least, I would hope that we would take a look at how this is administered if we're going to continue to use it so it's administered in a way that is actually efficient and not overly burdensome for our school districts. Thank you for hearing these bills today, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Rep. Torkelson. I'm glad you got here safely. We're going to lay over House File 854. Up next is Representative Herr for House File 1289. And Representative Hurst, since you're the member of the committee, would you like to move House File 1289 before us today yourself?
I would, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't have. Yes, I move House File 1289 to get it before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Hurst. And I believe do you have an author's amendment?
I do, and that author's amendment is DE-1, and that amendment is a delete all to the original bill, and the amendment offered is, and you should all have that in front of you.
Would you like to move your author's amendment then so we have the bill in the shape you would like to have it heard?
I would, Madam Chair.
Representative Herr moves the DE-1 amendment. Would you like to speak to the DE-1 amendment, please?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I come before you, this committee, with a really heavy heart that when this bill was given to me, I did not take the bill lightly. And I think that as a parent of two kids who grew up in public schools, I often think about the balance between documentation and meeting sped students and their needs. And I know that a lot of times a lot of things that are implemented and put into place are really to protect our students. And they're generally students who are marginalized, those with disabilities, black and brown kids who disproportionately get put into special ed, students from low-income families who don't know how to navigate systems and structures, and that this particular bill, that's why it weighed so heavily on me, that I understand the need for why it is that we need to reduce paperwork for our teachers because we want their time to be spent on working with students. but that also as a black and brown person myself, I've experienced having to really fight for my children, and I have to say that I fled war. I experienced discrimination on a daily basis. There are all of these other things that I have to navigate because I don't have cultural and social capital, and yet the one thing that I would fall on the sword for is my children's education. So I understand how important this issue is and the people on both sides of the argument as to what this should, what should be done with this. And I know with my heart that sped teachers don't take this job to do not to do right by their students, and parents don't show up to advocate to purposely make their other teachers' lives really hard. So this is really difficult. And so what this bill does is that it looks to align with prior written notice, the state and the federal requirements for this. I would just want to put out there that I've read through both statutes, and to me they look like they're asking for the same requirement, and it's really the how we interpret it at MDE, how MDE interprets this, which creates the discrepancies and why there's so much more documentation if you follow it for Minnesota's requirement. So with that, I would like to turn this over to
That's okay, Representative Herr. I just want to make sure that we take a vote on your DE amendment so it's before us today.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So Representative Herr has moved the DE1 amendment. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So now we have before us the DE1 amendment as the bill. Yes. And would you like to proceed to your testifier?
I would, please. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce Corey McIntyre as our testifier.
Mr. McIntyre, will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Good morning. My name is Corey McIntyre. I'm the Associate Superintendent in Anoka Hennepin Schools. And I wanted to say thank you to Representative Herr. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I commend you for your attention to this work. As you can already tell, this is challenging work, and we appreciate your time. The topic of prior written notice, just as a backdrop, the concern is that Minnesota law specifies the content that must be included in a prior written notice. Really, it's the interpretation of this and the manner that it requires school districts to include what we would believe to be excessive amounts of information that are required to go into the prior written notice. And our solution is really to try to bring alignment with federal law and eliminate the requirements of that additional information in the end to decrease time for our staff spent on completing forms and special education paperwork. The why behind this is really our common goal to increase student outcomes through increasing time with students of our staff. There's ample data that would suggest 50% of special education teachers' time is spent with students. The other 50% of their time is with all the items that you've heard about this morning. These bills you're hearing today really are trying to address the most immediate impact you can make. Minnesota exceeds the federal law by nearly 100 rules. These are the ones you can really make an early difference. My 20 years of experience in special education covers three states. I've worked in small, medium, and large districts. In my experience in Washington State and Wisconsin, they follow the federal law. And I want to say that my experience there, I saw firsthand strong parent collaboration with districts. I saw strong parent communication with districts. Most importantly, the extra time to focus on student outcomes and instruction. So there's two pieces of this bill that I would like to draw your attention to. Really, it's simple. The prior written notice requirements are too often, and they're too long. If we can reduce the frequency and the length of this work, we can make a substantial impact on the amount of time staff can spend with students without sacrificing protections for parents. So specifically, you heard about a conciliation conference. Each time there's a conciliation conference, there's a prior written notice that follows it. It's often very lengthy and replicates information already provided in other documents staff have prepared, including team evaluation reports and IEPs. Lastly, the information, again, from those evaluation reports and IEPs are right now needing to be duplicated and replicated again in a prior written notice, requiring excessive time of staff. And actually, I believe it's also troublesome for parents because now they have to read and review all that information one more time and make sense of it all over again. And I think it's an additional challenge for families who have children that are English learners. It also might require additional translation services. And it's very stressful for families to try to sort through all that information when it's already been provided and it's a duplicative in nature. So just to wrap things up here, I would like to stress that these changes, I believe, can bring mutual benefit to both parents and districts and really turn the focus more intensely on increased student learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McIntyre. And then I believe that we have Ms. Sarah McLaren up on the list to testify. Would you like to come forward, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah McLaren. First, I want to thank Representative Herr and Senator Pratt for hearing the concerns of parents of children with disabilities. Additionally, I want to share that the Coalition for Children with Disabilities appreciates the intent of the amendment, and my understanding is we'll continue to work with Representative Herr and Senator Pratt regarding this bill. I'm here today to explain the important role that a rather dry technical document known as the prior written notice has played in my daughter's education. My 8-year-old daughter has autism spectrum disorder. She was diagnosed at 3 years old, and thanks to early intervention through the schools and private therapies, is currently having a successful second grade year at her neighborhood public school. She also likes the movie Boss Baby, playing school with her dolls, and going tubing and ice skating during our lovely Minnesota winters. My daughter will have a bright, productive future with the appropriate supports, including special education services. In my experience as a parent, meetings regarding my daughter's education are overwhelming. Her educators are wonderful people who routinely go the extra mile for our daughter, but the emotional energy necessarily involved in these discussions always leaves me exhausted. All parents worry about making the right decisions for their children's education, but these anxieties are amplified when your child has a disability. The prior written notice and its 14-day timeline for my husband and I to respond to the district's proposal have given us a clear, concise summary of next steps amid the swirl of emotions these meetings create. I brought an example of a recent prior written notice for my daughter. It is quite similar to the 2.5-page form from the Minnesota Department of Education that I believe is included in the committee members' packets. So the form is 2.5 pages that's been included in your packets. Mine is also 2.5 pages, and you get used to reviewing them as a parent, but it lays out the steps, what the district intends to do, and then on the last page, it tells you you have 14 days to respond, and you get to mark, I agree, I need further information, or I do not agree, and next steps. And this, as thankfully, all the prior written notices we've so far received, I've been able to mark, I agree. I urge this committee to ensure that children with disabilities and their families continue to receive notice of their options when presented with a school district's proposal, and that they have a clear response time frame, similar to the current model prior written notice. Thank you for your consideration of my testimony.
Thank you so much, Ms. McIntyre. I also have Ms. Abdul on the list again. Would you like to come down? And just to give folks a heads up, and I feel bad that we didn't catch this before we had amendments come late, because we adopted the DE amendment, it has rulemaking in there. So we will have to move the bill to government operations, but it would be my intent to talk to the chair and have him bring it back to us. So just have that on people's radar right now. And Ms. Abdul, would you like to state your name for the record again and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Good morning again. My name is Aida Abdul. I'm a Somali autism mom. And thank you, Representative Herr, for your words. I wrote less than a paragraph about this bill, but you said something that made me think about this. You said that as a black and brown woman, it's very difficult to navigate through the special education. I mean, I've read the IDEA law maybe twice, and I had a headache. It's very complex. It's very confusing. It's not parent-friendly. It's certainly, I'm sure it's not teacher-friendly either. And the one thing that keeps us sane as parents that have children with disabilities is that when we get the few pages that the prior notice has that tells you what your rights are for the next step, and I don't think taking that away is the right thing to do. I think parents need to know, okay, so I didn't agree, or maybe I agreed with my child's IEP or individual education plan. What should I do next? If we take that away, particularly for people who are from marginalized communities, people who might not speak English, people who might not even know organizations, advocates exist, it's going to be even that much harder. And so I'm hoping there is a way to, yes, streamline paperwork, make the teacher's job easier so that they have more time in the classroom, but also don't shortchange the children and students with disability. I recommend that you work with families, not just school districts, but with families, and try to come up with a solution that works at the end of the day for everybody, but definitely for students with disabilities. And with that, I thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. We do have, before I go to questions from the table, I know Representative Grunhagen has an amendment to this bill, the A1. Would you like to talk about it? Representative Grunhagen.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you for having a committee meeting on this subject. I think it's long overdue, and it definitely is an area that is a lot of opinions of both sides of the issue. What my amendment does, it's a bill that I carried in a previous session. It was included in the Education Omnibus Bill last year that was vetoed by Governor Dayton. It's based off an OLA report of 2013. When I carried the bill and the OLA testified at the committee, they said that we had about 170 regulations and statutes in Minnesota above the federal requirement. I think we've touched on some of that here at this meeting. Currently, I have a strong concern about the amount of students that we're labeling and drugging. According to published reports in Minnesota, we're somewhere between 9 and 11%. There's even an indication that we're close to 15% of labeling and drugging of our children. Psychotropic drugs have severe negative consequences long-term over developing children being on the psychotropic drugs. It can affect their entrance into the military and among numerous other negative consequences of long-term drugging of developing children. France, by the way, according to published reports, only labels and drugs 0.5% of their children. So I'm not saying that never should happen, but I think it's way overboard in our school district, and I think that it borders on abuse in some situations. My amendment, I would reference lines 1.13 and 1.17. And just very quickly, 1.13 says, analyze trends in special ed enrollment and the reasons for the increased proportion of Minnesota students receiving special ed, including disparities in student identification. I believe minority students are disproportionately affected by this, and we need to get to the bottom of why we're doing that. Finally, I submitted two emails to all of you regarding this. One was destructive trends of mental health, the well-intentioned path to harm. It was co-authored by the former president of the APA, and he has a chapter in that book, The Diseasing of the American Children. And again, it's subjective labeling and drugging, it's not objective. Nothing shows up on an X-ray. Also, I sent you a recent Harvard study that shows we are now looking at labeling and drugging preschool children, which I consider to be a travesty. So the intent of this amendment is try to get to the bottom of it and find out why we are excessively labeling and drugging students in the K-12 system. With that, Madam Chair, I will withdraw this amendment at this time and appreciate the opportunity to speak to it.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Thank you for the discussion. Is there any other further questions at the table? I think I have Representative Erickson down.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Herr, I'm reading your language in your delete all, in which you ask the commissioner to provide a cost-benefit analysis for a proposed state requirement that exceeds the federal requirements for prior written notice. How does this differ from the SONAR that is required when we're beginning the rulemaking process or about to begin it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I'm not familiar with, you said the SONAR? Is that what you mentioned? Is that what you said?
Representative Erickson?
And I just wanted to state that the intent of that was that if anything goes beyond, if a requirement around the interpretation of a specific requirement goes above the end, that just to show the benefits of why you would ask for additional
additional language or additional requirements in the cost versus the benefit of that to the student or the family. So that's the intent of it.
So, Representative Herr, in the rulemaking process, there's the need for a statement of need and reasonableness, and that, I believe, would be comparable to your cost benefits. So probably from your background, this works really well, and that's a good statement to make. But I would hope that the SONAR, the statement of need and reasonableness, it's an acronym for that.
Sure.
Would cover that. So as you get into government operations, because this is much more a consideration in their department, maybe that will be a point of discussion.
Representative Herr. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And this is a work in progress. And we mentioned that, you know, this language is not ideal to really try to achieve what it is that we want to actually get out of this. And so we'll continue to work in the language and actually look at that as well. Thank you for the question and the information.
Thank you. Is there anybody else at the table that would like to make any comments? So we have the bill before us as amended, and my motion then would be to refer House File 1289 as amended to the Committee on Government Operations. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 1289 is referred to GovOps, and I'll be talking to the chair, too, to see if it can come back to us for our possession as well. Thank you, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you. And now we have Representative Moeller's House File 1390 up. Good morning, Representative Moeller.
Good morning.
Would you like to move your own bill before our committee?
I would, and before I do that, I just would note this is the first time I'm appearing in front of the committee. I did bring some Girl Scout cookies. I think they're going both directions here.
Thank you, Representative Moeller.
Everybody needs a Thin Mint on a Monday.
All right.
So, yes, I would move House File 1390, and I'm not clear if we need to pass this on to government ops or not.
Well, that depends. You also have an author's amendment in front of us. Would you like to move the author's amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
We have amendments labeled A1 in front of us and to put the bill in the shape the author would like it in. Would you like to speak quickly to your amendment, and then we'll vote on the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a bill to well, I'll talk about the bill in a minute. This bill also involves some rulemaking, and so that's why we have the A1 amendment, to make clear that the rules here are going to be consistent with the bill.
Thank you. So we have the A1 amendment before us. Any further discussion? And it's been moved. Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The A1 amendment has been adopted. Representative Moeller, would you like to continue with your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this bill is really getting at whether or not the IEP must include information about the school assessments. And right now, it's my understanding, the way the rule is interpreted, that many districts are putting these assessments into the IEPs. And that's really not necessary. We heard in the PowerPoint early on about this. But I would just say, as a parent with kids in public schools, I don't have kids with special needs, but as a parent, we're already getting that assessment information and testing. And so when I got this bill, I saw that there really isn't a need to require that those assessments be included in the IEP, and instead this bill would just make it so that they may be put into the IEP, but they wouldn't be required. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. And would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson, and I'm a retired special ed teacher with 37 years of experience. I'm so excited that the critical need to reduce paperwork is being addressed here. I support this bill because it is one example of how we can reduce paperwork by removing the requirement to include the state district-wide testing that are not specific to a student's educational needs, because parents, like she had mentioned, already received this information. So my specialty within special ed was a center-based classroom. And I had up to 8 students, and those students were in my classroom throughout the day. These students had significant needs cognitively and often behaviorally, medically, socially, and needed help with self-sufficiency. As a result of having them in my room all day long, there was virtually no chance to do paperwork during the school day. When I began in this field in 1979, my first experience was at Cambridge State Hospital. At that point, the paperwork was 3 pages long and handwritten, and there was a meeting each year near the child's birthday so that the families would come and see the child near their birthday and cover the special ed paperwork. That grew. I moved from there to working in District 287. The paperwork grew to about 7 pages typed on 4 carbon copied papers and 3 reviews a year on progress. It moved from there to computers, and from there it just didn't stop growing. It got longer and longer. 3-year assessments were added. The prior written notices were added. I mean, there were so many additional things that were added. And I would say that I left the field because of paperwork. I was, 37 years, and I'd had enough. It was my nights. It was my weekends. And I wanted my life back. So I'm a living example of how hard it is to attract and keep people in special ed, and it is the paperwork. We love the kids. We love making a difference. I tell people it fed my spirit and it's fed my family, and I have no regrets. I just regret that I feel pushed out of the field.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thank you for the history lesson on how paperwork has changed and for your service. We also have on the list Gretchen Godfrey from the Pacer Center. Would you please approach the testifier's table, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Gretchen Godfrey. I'm assistant director at Pacer Center and a member of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. And Pacer and the Coalition are neutral on this bill. It is our understanding that while current regulations require that state and district assessments be considered when developing the IEP as appropriate, that it's not actually required to be written into the IEP. So we agree with the premises of the bill that the IEP team can make the decision of whether that data needs to be reported in the IEP. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Are there any questions from folks at the table? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moeller, this is optional now, so why did you proceed to craft this proposal? Is it because you're hearing that MDE is maybe forcing school districts to include these assessments? I'm just wondering what the impetus was for creating this when it already is optional, and as the testifier said, used in the IEPs. Correct, testifier, isn't that what you said?
Sorry, go ahead, Ms. Godfrey. Or Ms. Johnson.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry, Mr. Moeller?
Yeah, my understanding is that it is not currently required to be included in the IEP.
Thank you, Ms. Godfrey, for the clarification. Representative Moeller.
Yep, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, it's my understanding that the way the rule is being interpreted is that districts are feeling like it is required, whether that's MDEs telling them or not. Maybe someone else back here can
I see Ms.
come Birch. Forward. It looks like someone's I'm using my lifeline here.
Yes, thank you. Phone a friend.
Oh, and here comes the department.
Mr. Corte and Mr. Bertrand. Mr. Corte, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Sure. Darren Corte. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. Yes, just to clarify, this isn't something that we monitor districts for. It's not something we're looking for when we're processing an IEP. Again, the statute says that it's only required when appropriate. So that would be, if the question ever came to us, that would be what we would refer to. We're not requiring districts to do it in all circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. Mr. Bertrand, you have something to add.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Jeff Bertrand, New Orleans School Superintendent. Our understanding is we interpret that the statute, legislation, and the requirements, the word is used in the formal word is shall, district shall consider. And our interpretation, shall really means you will. Mm-hmm. So I just want to clarify what we're understanding the word shall to be, and that's how we've been interpreting. That's hence the reason to eliminate that.
Thank you, Mr. Bertrand. Representative Erickson, did you have a follow-up?
Consider, yes. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Just the rule says shall consider. So,
in our interpretation, shall doesn't say may.
Yeah. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think he just answered it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Did you have your hand up? Oh, anybody else at the table? All right. So, Representative Mueller, would you like to have a final word?
I don't have any other comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller, for bringing this forward for us to discuss it. I move to refer House File 1390 as amended to the Committee on Government Operations. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 1390 is referred to Government Operations. All right. So we have House File. I'm going to move things around a little bit because we have Representative Howard I saw earlier waiting so patiently. So why don't we have you come up next, and then we will move to our final bill, Representative Bennett's after that. So Representative Howard, would you like to come to the table and move House File? I move House File 1560 before the committee for discussion. Representative Howard, welcome to the Education Policy Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I have just moved House File 1560 before us for discussion. I also note that you have, I believe, an author's amendment.
I do, Madam Chair.
Anybody like to move the author's amendment for us for discussion?
So moved.
Representative Herr has moved the author's amendment labeled A1 before us for discussion. Representative Howard, would you like to speak to the A1 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. The A1 amendment simply removes some legislation on funding for paraprofessionals that's going to be carried in another bill and has to focus on the policy here in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Howard. This is basically a little housekeeping to the wrong jackets were dropped with all the language in, and we really had wanted to just discuss the issues around the special ed paperwork. So do I see any questions around the A1 amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendments to House File 1560, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The A1 amendment has been adopted. Now we have House File 1560 in front of us the way the author would like to discuss it. Representative Howard, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, an important housekeeping. I do have some, as this is the first time before this committee, I have some donuts from the Fightin' 50A in Bloomington coming around.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Now you may proceed.
So my bill today, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, is House File 1560, and it seeks to expand the opportunity of our talented and hardworking special education teachers to do what they love, and that is to teach. This issue is personal to me. My mom, Cheryl Howard, who is here today, taught elementary special education for almost 40 years. And I vividly remember growing up what our dining room table looked like on the weekends with paperwork strewn about the house. And Cheryl, like I know many, many teachers, chose to complete most of this work on the weekend, on her free time, because she would do anything to avoid sacrificing the time she would spend with her students. My mom was a great teacher. She knew her kids. She knew the families of her kids. She knew their strengths. She knew their weakness or their struggles. And she knew it took a little something special, a little different to reach each student. And that really is the genius of how my mom and how all teachers and countless educators change lives of students for the better. But the reality facing many of our special education teachers is they spend hours and hours of time away from their students doing paperwork. And others today have already spoken about that the alarming trend of teacher burnout. And we really need to find some solutions to do better by our teachers, to do better by our families, and importantly, as all of us are saying here today, better by our students. And I believe this bill is part of that necessary change. Specifically, this bill would allow for the elimination of short-term electives from individual education programs, with the exception of students who take alternate assessments. And importantly, this course could only be taken with the approval of the parent of the student. And that's important. Effective communication between teachers and parents is vital to the success of our special education students, and that's why this bill ensures it, that we have that level of collaboration. I would not dispute that paperwork is an important component of special education. It can be an effective way to stay organized and accountable for parents and students, but when that paperwork becomes so onerous that teachers are leaving the profession, working 60-hour weeks, 7 days a week, or getting pulled out of the classroom, then we're doing a disservice to the very students that our current system is meant to serve. And we can do better. Now I have the pleasure of introducing my mom, Cheryl Howard, to the committee, who can speak with greater experience on these matters.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Representative Howard. Would you like to state your name for the record and proceed, please?
I'm Cheryl Howard, retired special education teacher. And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to support the profession I loved for nearly four decades. Helping instill a love of learning and making a positive difference in the lives of children, it just has been so rewarding. And doubly so, knowing my students succeeded despite their learning challenges. When I started out in special education, my caseload was limited to 15 students. My job required creative problem solving, calm persistence, and passionate commitment. It was demanding but manageable. I was able to use my skills with these struggling kids and discover how to learn and achieve in school. But over the years, the job of the special education teacher has morphed from a demanding but rewarding job into a profession in crisis. Due to the stresses of rising caseloads and an overwhelming mountain of paperwork, throngs of talented special education teachers have left the profession, including many of my colleagues. One of them, Lisa Olson, had this response when I asked her why, after 15 years of serving as a special ed teacher, she went back to school to become a classroom teacher. Quote, "It was hard to give up entire weekends and family time to spend completing due process, paperwork, organizing meetings, and filing documents. But the hardest thing was being pulled from the most important part of my job, teaching children. There just wasn't enough time in a day to best be a teacher and a paperwork expert." Unquote. This legislation is a practical way to improve this paperwork dilemma, and more importantly, to better enable our teachers to provide proper instruction for their students. Setting clearly defined goals is vital to properly guide a student's IEP. But for many goals, short-term objectives are redundant and require data collecting and taking away valuable teaching time. And when a special education teacher begins working with a student, they monitor and adjust their teaching techniques. Tying teachers to specific objectives while goals are in flux can lead to cumbersome and needless revisions and increased paperwork. Of course, some teachers and parents may find it very helpful to develop a short-term objectives as they plan the IEP, and this bill has the flexibility for them to do so. The bottom line here is, let's not micromanage the ability of teachers to teach. We all want the best possible education for all of our students, and special education is an important part of that lofty goal. We must make changes in order to keep and attract great teachers. I believe this bill is a good and reasonable step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howard, and thank you for your years of service. We also have Rebecca Wade up. Would you like to introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
My name is Rebecca Wade. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Rebecca Wade, and I'm a special education teacher. I'm currently working in the Roseville area schools as a TOSA, which is a teacher on special assignment. In this capacity, I support educators at all 11 sites in the district. As the due process TOSA, I monitor compliance, provide supports to educators with their due process, and provide professional development around due process components and co-teaching, all of which have an impact on student learning. I'm here today in support of House File 1560. I knew at a very young age that I wanted to be a teacher, and I am humbled for the opportunities that I have had as a special education teacher. Teaching in a classroom, directly supporting the learning of students with disabilities, and now as a teacher on special assignment, supporting the amazing educators who are directly involved with that, with supporting student learning. Special education teachers are passionate about their job and their students. And yes, they know part of their job will be doing paperwork. But when paperwork becomes repetitive, excessive, and so time-consuming, that joy of teaching loses some of its spark. I engage and interact with special education teachers every day and see and hear the toll that excessive paperwork is causing. When I ask what I can do to support, the answer, without fail, includes some mention of decreasing or improving the amount of paperwork. The excessiveness of paperwork is a contributing factor as to why special education teachers are leaving the profession and leaving us with a shortage of teachers. Allowing the option to eliminate short-term objectives, something that is not required by federal law, will allow special education teachers to use their prep time to plan rigorous and engaging lessons, review progress monitoring data that allows them to see the growth of their students, and collaboratively plan with other educators, all things that contribute more to student learning than writing compliant short-term objectives. And does there need to be accountability and transparency? Absolutely. Special education teachers are professionals. The integrity of their work should not be questioned because they are asking for, wanting, and needing for due process requirements to be improved. House File 1560 does not eliminate the requirement of an IEP team to make decisions that will guide the learning of individual students. Parents and family are and will continue to be an integral part of the IEP team that collaboratively draft the individual plan. Progress reports are completed multiple times per year and an annual IEP meeting occurs. All things that will continue to provide parents, families with current progress of their students' learning. What House File 1560 does say is that having the option to eliminate short-term objectives with parent, family approval will allow special education teachers to focus more of their time on things that really drive and improve student learning, which is the ultimate goal for all teachers. Thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. And I believe I have Jody Manning up next. And then if Ms. Abdul would like to testify too, could you be ready to come on down? Ms.
Hello
Manning,
again.
Proceed. State your name for the record again.
Thank
and
you.
Please proceed.
Jody Manning from Pacer Center. And I wanted to give you an idea of the scope of the work that we do at Pacer Center. The Parent Training and Information Center receives, on average, 1,200 contacts every month. So I just wanted to make sure you're aware of this. Related to this bill, House File 1560, I wanted to say that we support the paraprofessional provisions that were in the original intent of that bill. We see additional training for paraprofessionals as a really valid opportunity for us to serve students. At Pacer Center, we like to say that the paraprofessionals are in the front line. They have very important work that they do. So any additional training that they could get would obviously support the students that they serve. I also want to state that we oppose the provision in the bill related to opting out of short-term objectives. We see short-term objectives as a very important measure for parents and for school professionals. And from our experience, we are somewhat, I should say more than somewhat, we are incredibly concerned that parents would be talked out of having short-term objectives in their child's IEP. I want to tell you that I was given permission from a parent to read her child's goal. I have two, but I'll start with one, and short-term objectives, just to give you an idea of what we see. This child is in third grade. I've been working with her family since she was in kindergarten. She has an IEP under the Autism Spectrum Disorders category. For the sake of this story, I'm going to call her Susie. The goal says, Susie will decrease her physical acting out behaviors from a current level of acting out when frustrated 4 times per month on average to a rate of 1 time per month on average. It's a beautifully written goal. It states the skill that the child needs, the direction of change. It states the from, the baseline of where the student is currently, and where the team would like the student to be in the 1 year period of the annual IEP.
However, imagine that you are the parent of this beautiful third grade child. That goal means very little to you. It's professional jargon, and it doesn't give you any insights as to what they're doing to reach that goal. Let me, before I read the short-term objectives, tell you that we have a wonderful training at Pacer Center that we call ABCs of the IEP. And when I'm talking about this portion of the IEP, I always tell parents, imagine that you set a goal for yourself that you would lose 10 pounds in a one-year period. And you didn't give yourself any benchmarks, but you looked at it again in 1 year. What do you think the chances are that you would have lost the 10 pounds? Not very likely. Parents understand that. So moving to Susie's short-term objectives, there are two. And I will say that in my 15 years, most IEPs have two short-term objectives, not five. And if they have more than two, it's usually about three. The first short-term objective says, Susie will accept adult direction to a safe place when behaviorally escalated on 4 out of 5 observations. The next short-term objective says, Susie will request a break or calming activity on 4 out of 5 opportunities of being overwhelmed. The short-term objectives give the parents very important information about how the school is measuring her progress, but it also gives them tips on things that they can use in the home. This family has incorporated options of removing their child when she's in stressful situations and teaching her some calming strategies. They're working in collaboration with the school, and the student is having much more success. This family wholeheartedly believes that their child would not have made the success that she has without the use of these short-term objectives.
Thank you, Ms. Manning.
Thank you.
Is there any questions from the table? Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But the parents in that case still could have requested these short-term objectives under this change in the law. Is that right?
Representative Howard?
That's correct. And I think the key word here is collaboration. We definitely want to make sure that the teachers and parents have that ability to collaborate and have that understanding. And that's why that is included in this bill, to make sure that parents have the ability to work with their educators and their IEP plan.
And if I follow up, Representative Mueller?
One more. So if a parent were to waive those short-term objectives but then later want those, would there be an opportunity for those to be incorporated into the IEP?
Representative Howard.
That's a good question. That would certainly be my intent. And if there's need to kind of look at language there to make sure that we have that flexibility, it's definitely warranted.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions at the table? All right. Representative Howard, final word, and then we'll lay your bill over.
I'm sorry, I did
have one more testifier signed up. Ms. Abdul, would you like to come up and briefly, about 2 minutes? Ms. Abdul, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, again, my name is Aidil Abdul. I'm a Somali autism mom. I'm just going to read what I wrote just so I make sure that I hit every point. I am vividly against this for the simple reason that without having short-term objectives, many children, including my son, will not meet their annual educational goals. While I understand Representative Howard's view and some of the district's reasoning of too much paperwork and cost, I don't think changing students with disabilities is the right direction. I don't think shortchanging, rather, is students with disabilities is the right direction. There must be a better and alternative ways that are cost-effective for school districts and teachers to do their job. The Individuals with Disabilities Education and Improvement Act idea clearly states that all students with disabilities deserve free and appropriate public education, or FAPE. In order for many students to meet this, annual goals must be broken down into short-term objectives. There are too many reasons for this, but I'll give you a couple of examples that relate to my own son. As I said, he has nonverbal autism. And let's say the IEP team wrote a goal that said that he will learn to communicate via typing. That's a wonderful goal, right? That's, as the person before me said, that's really written professionally well. But to the parent like me, I want to know, how are you going to get there? I want to know how, when you get there, is it going to be by the time the next year comes up, he's actually typing to communicate, Mom, I want juice. Mom, I need to go to the bathroom, so on and so forth. And this is a huge goal for children with nonverbal autism like mine. Without breaking this goal into short-term objectives will not only be not attainable, but the goal will not be met. The first objective can be something like the student will learn to type three-letter words, such as fox, say, or you. And if you notice, they all start with different letters. The second short-term objective can be the student will learn to type three-letter words that start with the same letter, because you want to teach discrimination, so it would be hot, hat, and hog, etc. You see, typical children without disabilities learn by observing monkey see, monkey do. But for our children with disabilities, we must break individual goals down into smaller skills that are teachable, measurable, and obtainable. Another reason for the need to have short-term objectives is that the student is not making progress, then the team can regroup and figure out a different way of teaching. This is important, especially for autism, given that no two children with autism have the same challenges and learn differently. In summary, short-term objectives indicate the steps the student will take to reach their annual goal. I respectfully ask that you vote no on this bill unless you're somehow able to make it so that they're not removed. And I understand that representative asks if the parent asks for it. A lot of parents are not going to ask for it because they won't know it exists. And how do you ask for something if you don't know it exists? Particularly parents that look like me, particularly parents who are from underserved communities, parents who might not speak English, parents who might not understand or have read the IDEA law will not ask for this. I respectfully ask, again, that you vote no on this bill and not take away children's right to free and appropriate public education, because having short-term objectives are what makes the goals appropriate. I thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Abdul. And Representative Howard, I think we can look at that language, because right now a parent would actually have to, at the front end, say, no, I don't need them, so they'll obviously know they're there. So we can talk about that later. Any further discussion? Any further comments, Representative Howard?
Just thank you to the testifiers, both for and against all of the bills here today. And just a final comment, you know, I'm a new legislator here and new to this issue in terms of our work at the legislature, but not new to this problem. And this is a decades-old problem. And a lot of talk has happened today about the importance of collaboration. And I just think that we as legislators and as educators and as stakeholders in this can do a little better job modeling that collaboration and working together to reach some consensus, because this is a year-after-year problem. And we need to find some solutions. And we're all coming here from the premise of doing what's right for our students. We share the same goal. And so I would just urge all of us to continue working together this session.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And I will we will be laying over House File 1560 as amended. And Representative Bennett, you've got the final bill up today. And then I want to open it up to those in the audience. And I know I have Ms. Fonda Contreras here from Hopkins after we have this bill to speak first, and then might be able to have just a few more because we're running close to end of time here. So, Representative Bennett, would you like to move House File 1517 before us?
I would, Madam Chair, and there is an amendment.
Move that.
You want me to move it first?
Move the bill first, and then we'll have you move your amendment.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I move House File 1517.
We have House File 1517 before us, and Representative Bennett, you have an author's amendment that's labeled A1. Would you like to speak to it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the A1 amendment simply puts the language into the same language that the Senate has, so this matches up with Senator Claussen's bill.
Thank you. Representative Bennett, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I move the A1 amendment.
Representative Bennett has moved the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the A1 amendment has been adopted. Go ahead and testify to your bill, Representative Bennett.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Last bill here, so thanks for hearing this. What this bill does is very similar to the previous bill that we just heard. It takes the IEP goals and objectives and aligns them with federal requirements, very similar to what Wisconsin's doing and many other states. Minnesota, as you've heard, does require the addition of documenting short-term objectives. This bill would put that as optional, and except for in the case of alternate, when a student is taking alternate assessments, then they would be required to have these short-term objectives. I just want to, after listening to the testimony for the last bill, I want to add one thing. This bill is not about eliminating short-term objectives. And if you talk to any teacher, we all teach, and I'm a former teacher of 33 years, we teach using short-term objectives. We set a goal and we do objectives. Students will still have their short-term objectives. The teachers just won't be required to document those. And what this does, in my mind, is it empowers teachers and parents at the local level, that IEP team that knows best that student, empowers them to make the decisions on how many objectives are necessary, whether they're necessary or not, and frees teachers up to do what we want them to do, and that is to teach. And I just want to share briefly from my own experience as a teacher, and I started out in special ed. I taught special ed for about 8 or 9 years before I went into regular ed. And when I started in the early 80s, that dates me now, but it was actually fun to teach. And I enjoyed my special ed teaching and then later my regular ed teaching. But as I heard from other teachers, as the time went on from those early 80s, more and more paperwork was expected. And you know what? It didn't help the teaching at all. What it did was take us away from our students. And even in regular ed, this is happening, where we're requiring our teachers to do more and more documentation, and it's frustrating. And I came to the point where I didn't enjoy teaching anymore, and I used to love it, and I still love working with kids, but I hate to say it, I'm happy I'm not involved now. And we have to look at this. This bill, again, it empowers teachers and parents to make those decisions at the local level, instead of the state saying that we have to do two objectives for every goal, no matter what. Universal one-size-fits-all does not always work, and I think we need to offer those options at the local level. So I'm going to turn this over, Madam Chair, if that's okay, to my testifier. And this is Laura, and I'm going to, I think I'm not even going to say your last name because I don't want to destroy it. Laura, who is the Director of Special Education Services in Carver County.
Hello, could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, good morning. Or it is still good morning.
A few more minutes.
My name is Laura Peary-Kyle. Madam Chair and fellow committee members, thank you for your time this morning. I am the current president of Minnesota Association of Special Education Administrators, otherwise known as MACE, and I'm also the Director of Specialized Services in Eastern Carver County Schools. This is my 25th year in education and my 8th year as a special education director. MACE welcomes any effort to reduce the paperwork burden without negatively impacting the delivery of special education services for our students. I'd like to thank New Ulm for their efforts and everyone who has testified before me. While we believe the proposed bills you're hearing today will not fix our problems in special education due process, we certainly think that it's going to get the ball rolling in the right direction. We have talented, passionate teachers who went into the profession to teach. Due to the amount of paperwork, teachers are not given the opportunity to provide high-quality intervention and instruction. And sadly, we have many teachers leaving the profession, like you've heard this morning. Personally, I'm very proud to say that my daughter, who is a senior in high school, is planning on going to college to pursue a special education teaching degree. I see her joy and passion when she's volunteering and supporting students with disabilities, but I dread the day that passion dims due to her realization that she will need to spend more time in paperwork than opportunities that would make a difference in the lives of students with disabilities. We know there is no correlation between paperwork and achievement, but we do know that our teachers matter. In fact, excellence in teaching is the most powerful influencer on student achievement. With the focus on due process, accountability, and monitoring, my fellow special education directors and I spend significant staff development budget and time on required paperwork trainings. To close the achievement gap, we need to shift our priorities to recruitment, retention, resiliency, and instructional competencies for our teachers. I'd like to thank Representative Bennett for bringing House File 1517 forward. This bill is an example of how we can reduce paperwork by aligning Minnesota with federal law without impacting student instruction. MAIS supports eliminating required short-term objectives. We'd like the fact that this bill allows for flexibility. Depending on the nature of the goal and situation, IEP teams can determine when objectives are needed. To illustrate my point, I actually wrote you a measurable annual goal to share with you, similar to what our teachers are writing on a daily basis. The purpose of this goal is for our special education teacher, John, to increase time spent on instructional activities. By June 2020, when given a reduction in state paperwork requirements, John will increase his time engaged in work activities related to student instruction from a current level of 20 hours out of 40 hours per week to 30 hours out of 40 hours per week as measured by teacher activity logs. Okay. Given this goal, we clearly know John's target and we can measure his progress. If John moved school districts, his new team would have no trouble striving toward the same outcomes. Including objectives under this goal would not help us provide John with instruction. It would not help us collect data, measure, or report progress. Requiring objectives in Minnesota exceeds federal law. It's redundant and requires unnecessary teacher time. In addition to being measurable, annual goals are specific and based on the needs of the student. Progress monitoring data is used by the teacher and IEP team to monitor and adjust instruction and service delivery. Eliminating objectives will not change the quality of instruction. However, it will provide more time for instruction.
Thank you, Ms. Pingree-Kyle.
Yep.
Pingree-Kyle.
Pingree-Kyle.
Had it backwards. Sorry about that. I believe there is a Mr. Don McNeil signed up to testify. Would you like to make your way to the stand, state your name for the record, and proceed?
Good morning. My name's Don McNeil. I'm a dad first. My wife is in the gallery. That we have three children together, Megan, Evan, and Ethan. Megan has Williams syndrome. It's like Down syndrome, but it's not. We have Evan, our typical child, who my wife is amused. I can fit this into every conversation. He's a medical student, first-year medical student at Dartmouth in New Hampshire. Our third child, Ethan, is severely autistic. He's the hand-flapping, nonverbal kind. Does not wear clothes unless required, and you will find me calming him at night in the last drive of each night. He'll be buck naked in the back seat. My wife is never amused by that. I also serve on the PACER board, and I'm here as well on behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. So I mentioned I'm an attorney by day as well, and you should know that previously there was a question about whether there was some collaboration in the past, and I bristle because I feel like sometimes I've been ignored. In 2008, 2009, I served on the task force for this body, the legislature, to compare all the federal and state regulations and laws, and we painstakingly went through every single one of them and made over two dozen recommendations to you all. In 2013, after the auditor issued a report, I was again asked to volunteer and donate a lot of pro bono billable time to this cause to look at a number of other issues on caseload and other ways to reduce paperwork, and we made 29 recommendations at that time. I'm going to go back in the report I pulled from my notes that I've kept in my credenza from 2008-2009, the very issue of this bill addresses, we voted on. We had a collaboration that included school district educators, we had administrators, we had attorneys practicing in this area, we had parents, we had advocates. And when we voted on this issue back then, we voted 0-8 to change to what we call the federal minimum. I'm going to pause for a second because as I sat here as a dad this morning, I continue to hear about federal alignment. We call it federal minimum, right? When we call our congressional delegation and we say, we want you to change things in Washington, what they tell us is it's states' issues. This is for the states to worry about. When I come here, the states are saying, we hear our opposition, and they're not really my opposition, I shouldn't call them that. We work with them every day as parents. But they always want to go to the federal minimum, and they say, take it to Washington, D.C. As a parent, we're wondering, where do we go? We think in Minnesota we're doing it right. We strongly oppose this particular bill because it removes short-term objectives that make a difference for us on a day-to-day basis. Here's an example. I brought my daughter's IEP, just so you could see what it talks about when we compare for the paperwork. Here's her short-term objectives here. On basic math skills, we wrote in there that we should work with her on getting change. So what we laugh about, we go to McDonald's. Her favorite meal was a plain cheeseburger without meat. Now you pause and think what that is. Because at McDonald's, they can't figure out what that is every time. We have to ask for it a second time. But when she gets change, that's something the parents work on every day. That's the short-term objective. I'm on the same page. My wife and I are on the same page with the teachers. They're working on making change at school. We're working on making change on the weekends. That's what short-term objectives do. That's the reason we do it right in Minnesota. We should not make a dramatic change on something that makes us one of the best in the nation. Why should I go to what Wisconsin has done for all states to compare us to? I like to say Wisconsin, they have a lousy football team, and they do it the wrong way when it comes to special education. I know there are a lot of southern states that go to the federal minimum, but in Minnesota, we do it right. And this is one of the ways that we do it right, and we should not make such a dramatic change. You know, Ms. Manning testified earlier. It is her analogy, so she owns this one. If you're going to have a weight loss goal for the year, I know my neighbor I run with on every Saturday, he tells me how much he weighs before we run and how much he weighs after we run. He's checking in on his short-term objectives. I was amused when the donuts were handed around when we were talking about short-term objectives, because if you're going to have a donut, you're going to check the scale later on and find out how you're doing. We're only asking that we do the same thing for our children. So we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McNeil, and thank you for your story. I have Ms. Abdul, did you have anything else to add? Otherwise, we'll move forward. Thank you. Is there any questions for Representative Bennett on this bill? Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, it is permissive in her delete all or in her amendment. So I think that the testifier may have missed that, because yours is permissive, right?
That is correct. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, and that is correct. It's permissive, and this puts it back in the hands of the school districts, the IEP teams, to decide if it's appropriate or not appropriate.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. What we're going to do now is we're going to lay over your bill as amended, and I'm going to bring down Ms. Contreras to
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Bennett, would you like the final word?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to close saying, there's a saying that says there can be too much of a good thing. And I honestly think that as a state, we have moved way over that threshold of too much of a good thing. And the question is, do we want our teachers in teaching our children, because we know that makes a difference? Or do we want to push them off into a different classroom by themselves to do paper pushing? I know what I would want if it was my child, and I also know what I'd want as a teacher. So let's let teachers teach. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. I'm going to lay over this bill as amended for possible inclusion. Ms. Contreras, would you like to join us? State your name for the record and proceed with any comments on any of the bills we heard today. And then if there's anybody else in the audience, we'll have about a brief 5 minutes afterwards to see if anybody else has anything else to add. And then we will move on. Ms. Contreras.
Thank you. Fonda Contreras, Director of Special Services for Hopkins Schools. I just wanted to come up and talk about House File 853, and then some of the others just in general as well. I began my career teaching general education, and then I also taught special education. And in between those roles, I've had different leadership positions as well. And so, having done the paperwork, I get it. Talking to parents in my current role, I also hear parents' voice. And I think the last parent that came up and just talked about how there used to be a collaborative effort before with all groups working together to get this to an efficient level where we're still having the paperwork that's legally due, but at an efficient level that's not taking up so much of teachers' time. I always say that for special ed teachers, it's the ABCs, it's the academics, the behavior, and the compliance. I just want to talk about two teachers, one last week that broke down in tears when I told her she could have some extra time to do her due process because she was feeling so overwhelmed. And so there definitely is truth to being able to retain teachers in this field due to the level of paperwork that's due. So I just would love to see, you know, some collaborative efforts somehow to get it to a point that's manageable yet with key concepts. And then also another new teacher, brand new teacher, is actually co-teaching in a gen ed classroom. She's a special ed teacher. She's rocking it. The students have had a teacher to leave as of December. And so both teachers in the classroom are brand new. They're meeting the needs of the students. They're teaching. They're managing behavior where the kids had a rocky kind of start of the year. And so things are now stabilizing. But now this teacher feels the burden of having to do 5 evaluations between now until the end of the year. And so how do we support new teachers and keep them, but also, you know, maintaining the key concepts that's needed to do this work? So I just would like to talk about that. And then also for the FBAs, because there was a time where they used to be standalone, and now it's part of the 3 years, which I had a meeting this morning with a parent that had been to the school 3 different times to kind of get behavior in place. And so giving the team some ideas of how to work with the student and to put it into writing without having to wait another 3 years. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Contreras. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to come down and testify? I've got one more here. And could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, my name is Susan Montgomery. And I have a supporter, Josh Crossman from Ed Allies. I had time to write up something quick. This is an impromptu, so I didn't have a chance to reread it. Good morning, committee and community members. My name is Susan, and I'm a single disabled parent of a student with a disability. My son has had an IEP since he was in pre-K. He has been abused by students, cops, and staff since in 17 schools or related programs, which equals to 5 school districts. And he is only 14, so we have a long ways to go. There was little to no paperwork or conciliation regarding his safety or discrimination when I bring these things forward. All things considered, he is doing very well. He is currently in 8th grade at Roseville Area Schools. This is the first time he has been at one school for this long, going on 2 years. He has worked extremely hard to get good grades, participate in sports, make friends, and build positive relationships in schools. We don't often get paperwork regarding that good news, though. It is important to note he identifies Black, so with that said, I see a lack of conversation regarding students of color's voices, especially in the data and surveys mentioned. There is also little language around English language learners and students with free and reduced lunch. In regards to things like paperwork reduction for staff, it should be noted that kids like mine often only get paperwork when they are being disciplined, and sometimes even that is insufficient. There is huge racial disparities in special education across Minnesota public schools. We do not have the same access, support, services, or resources that other families do. It's not just an achievement gap, it's an opportunity gap. The barriers and discrimination a child like mine faces is often extreme, but rarely nothing is done to change it. A parent like me doesn't always get to engage in goals or short-term objectives because we are constantly dealing with other crises in school. I try to be very supportive of my son's IEP team and other staff as I volunteer a lot and advocate for all children, but it's difficult with kids like mine because they continue to fall through the cracks, which takes me away from doing other important things. Please keep this in mind when looking at these bills today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Montgomery, and I wish your son luck. 2 years in one school I know is very, very successful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right, seeing no other folks in the audience, Mr. Heller, one last final word. Speak to a specific bill, please, and then we'll be closing out here.
If I may provide some handouts.
Continue, Mr. Heller.
With permission of the chair, can I provide some handouts to the members?
Yes, go ahead.
As the handouts are coming around, my name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. Come to speak on some of these special ed files today. First of all, if anyone's aware of it, on the 1277 on a transition planning bill,
Mr. Heller, we did not have that on the agenda today. We removed it. So if you can move on to your other ones.
Okay, let's drop down to the 1390. Students have two types of assessments. The one that standardized assessments, the MCA3s. Frankly, students have standard-based IEPs. What that means is, and unfortunately, the special education forum does not have a checklist currently to tell people what the difference is. There's a modified assessment that students can take that can read out loud, but the MCAs do not allow to read out loud. If you think about it, some of those standards are done in the classroom. And some of those standards are done in the classroom. And remember, the MCA is a summative assessment, which means what they can do independently. Where the formative assessments, like the NWEA, is instructional. We've got two types of outcomes. And it's my understanding the Special Education Advisory Committee and the State Department can call me on this. You'll have to call him down, but if he doesn't come down and speak against it, I'll consider it correct and accurate. The Special Education Advisory Committee is considering to go to 1.4 cap. Currently, the federal on the cognitively challenged assessment is currently set at 1%. Currently, special education firms do not, again, identify that's a standard-based IP. How many people know a standard-based IP? And number two, that some of those are done in the classroom. Once again, if you go to 1517 on eliminating those short-term objectives, and there's another bill here too. There's another one. That's Mr. Bennett bill. You get into the assessment part. Where the piece of this is that what part of the assessment fits into the kid's IEP, and is the student's IEP an instructional IEP for an outcome as it relates to the IDEA Act of core mission statement regarding future education, employment for independent living, or is it all instructional? Frankly, I believe it's independent as it relates to those three core principles of IDEA. So once you start dissimulating to take away small objectives, which is part of the pie that makes up the ingredients, you have shattered the whole idea of those three elements of IDEA and violates that. I support 1560. That regarding paraprofessionals funding, I've had many experiences as paraprofessional when I do data requests. They're working on the IEP, but they have no time and they don't get paid for it. I don't know how they shift their dollars around.
Mr. Heller, we actually took that out of the bill with the amendment. We'll be discussing that on possibly on Monday. So I appreciate you doing the written comments. We're going to move on, though. Do you have one more thing to say, and then we're moving on?
Regarding functional behavior assessment, 853. If the district isn't following their total special education system plan, which ties together all the integration that goes on between state agencies, other cooperatives, etc., the parents, the doctors that actually are the only ones that can say you have a practice ability, nor does a functional behavior assessment include medical. And if you don't include a medical aspect of a functional behavior assessment, and the IEP doesn't have a checkbox for people with practice disabilities, and those special protections that come with those individuals, then they do a disservice. The current special education plans that the State Department never mentioned that they completed this year, we've been working on them for 3 years, does not indicate that it's a functional behavior assessment is required for this type of students. Certain rules specifically require that. Parents are expected just to know when they walk in. This does a disservice to this process when you do a comprehensive evaluation, which includes that, because I had the district miss it. And I think when you start segregating this out, I think we do a disservice. Once again, the parents don't know.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Heller. I appreciate your personal experience, and we're going to move on now. Thank you for your written testimony. And just for the committee, since we have fewer people left, I'll quick make the announcement that the bills for tomorrow, the amendments are due by 2:30 p.m. today. We'll be meeting tomorrow at our regular time at 2:30 to 4 o'clock in room 5. This meeting's adjourned.